Off the Ball on News Talk 106 to 108.
And we shall wonder if one day our game is played on the other planets. We will have interplanetary competitions.
Your job now is to stand by our new manager.
I always said if I was Aladicio, they'd probably say I was more of a tactical genius.
If my granny had balls, she'd be my granddad.
Big Sam Aladicio, that's right.
Yeah, so we've already been banging on about John Terry, much to the annoyance of our listeners who are like, never talk about this again. And also, yeah. You small-minded, petty people, you're just jealous of John Terry, which was the other type of text that came in, because we're not Chelsea fans and so therefore don't understand the sacrifices that he's made for them.
Or the relationship. This game is really bad. All of Europe is watching this game now and bemoaning how bad it is, to be honest. It's not lived up to the classic. Who are these people who are writing about free-flowing, wonderful Ajax? Johan Cruyff's vision.
David Winner.
To be fair to David, he did say things are still very fragile. They have finished second in the league, but
yeah.
They've just been bossed tonight. They've been very disappointing. Physically, even, they look
kids.
A level below Manchester United. Yeah, right from the off. It's just never really happened for them. But equally, Manchester United haven't been very good or cohesive themselves. They haven't put together any really good football. Lots of errant moments, even just the last few minutes. Rashford down the left-hand side. Just... I don't know, was it a shot or the most miscued cross you'd ever see? But he just wellied the ball with his left foot 30, 40 metres in the air. Just, it was bizarre. And it's been in keeping with the game. Fellaini's actually done okay. He's been knitting play together better than most. But on the whole,
it's his kind of game.
Everybody's watching this game thinking, no, it hasn't quite happened.
2-0 to Man United, maybe yeah. 3. Ooh, Fellaini's just had a header saved. So yeah. 2-0 with 25 minutes left to go. Now, we're not going to talk about John Terry anymore, but we are going to talk about one of the other great one-club footballing careers, which comes to an end this coming weekend. 307 goals in 785 appearances. Francesco Totti hangs up his boots on Sunday.
Francesco Totti è stato protagonista della trasferta proprio ieri, della trasferta della primavera giallorossa.
Lo aspetta Materazzi, Totti si porta quasi in zona tiro, Totti si è liberato, pallonetto, Francesco Totti! Un gol pazzesco, pazzesco per il 2-0.
Pallone per il capitano, gol! Gol! Ha segnato!
La mette in mezzo, secondo palo. Gol pazzesco di Totti! Ma cosa ha fatto Totti?
Totti, siluro! È un grandissimo gol! Francesco Totti, la Roma in vantaggio!
Francesco Totti!
Che grande gol!
Splendido gol di Francesco Totti, che firma la doppietta e chiude la partita. Splendido gol di Totti, 4-1.
Totti contro Schwarzer.
Okay, so a range of goals all the way back to his debut and his debut goal as well. Paddy Agnew is on the line to talk to us about an absolutely amazing career. And Paddy, we were just trying to get a grasp of how beloved and how understood Francesco Totti was. And not everybody always thought of him as one of the greats.
Well, yeah, you're absolutely right. In particular, the Anglo-Saxon world never, until very recently, didn't rate him at all. I remember... You know, a lot of British football commentators, you know, tell me what is all the fuss about that guy, because he never does it. And to a certain extent, I can understand why they say that, because he never played for Juventus, Inter, Milan. He played for Roma, who, you know, haven't anything like the same sort of record in Europe as the other Italian clubs have. So people outside of Italy probably never saw the best of him. You had little flashes of it in more recent times. I'm thinking of the goal he scored against Man City in the Champions League last year. But I mean, at that point, you were talking about a player who was 38 years of age. He was already very much at the end of his career.
In 2010, Graeme Souness, Glenn Hoddle and Terry Venables were doing the TV coverage. He's never been accused of being a workaholic, smirked Souness. Yeah, he's got talent, but you know my thoughts on him. Followed by Glenn Hoddle. Nah, he's not top drawer. He'd have moved on if he was. Someone would have come and got him. And Venables, Glenn's right. He's been a luxury. Not really sure if it was a lost in cultural translation, but Francesco Totti was a great player, right?
He was a wonderful. He was a wonderfully talented player. He had. It's true. You could criticize him on the work rate. You could criticize him on the way he was, particularly at the beginning of his career. He wasn't as fit or as professional as he is now. But he's always had and continues to have, even right down to the end, an absolutely wonderful first touch, a terrific guy and a great person to lay on a sort of 40-yard, 30-yard through ball to a striker in front of him. And on top of that, he's always very comfortable on the ball, so he'd do, you know, things that other players would think about twice, you know. Yeah, taking the little cook guy of a penalty kick that he took in the Euro 2000 semi-final against Holland in Amsterdam, or when it was Amsterdam. He did things that other players would think about two or three times before they try them.
So he's a five-time Italian Footballer of the Year, Paddy, so clearly he's rated in Italy.
Yeah.
To what extent, though, how highly is he really talked about in the real upper echelon of Italian football, or are there still some reservations, Anglo-Saxon, which extend to Italy?
I think there might be a little bit of what, but very little compared to what Glenn Hoddle and Terry Venables were suggesting. No, I mean, there's no doubt about it. He has to be seen in a top 10 of Italian footballers of all time at this point, but an awful lot of Italians. You know, there are a number of factors, not just the player, but it's also the fact that, you know, he's been at Roma since 1989. He's been at Roma nearly 30 years, since he was an 11-year-old, and he stayed there. And in modern football, that's most unusual, and a lot of people like that, and the fact that he's remained, you can't say that, well, he didn't move on because he never got, he wasn't good enough to get a good enough offer. I don't think that's absolutely true or absolutely fair. I think there were occasions when he could have moved on. There were occasions when teams like Barcelona or Real Madrid were interested in him, but he chose. He chose to stay in Rome because he's a very Roman lad, and he's always felt very, very strongly attached to his Roman background and to the club AS Roma.
I remember being in a bookshop in Rome one time and seeing a book of jokes.
Yes.
About Francesco Totti, and he had written this book of jokes that were against him and had published it for charity. Well, obviously he hadn't written it, but, like, you know what I mean.
That's an aspect of Totti that you wouldn't be aware of unless you lived in Italy. And it is that he's as time has gone by, at the beginning of his career, he seemed to be your classic inarticulate, disinterested footballer. In interviews, somebody really wasn't interested in making any sort of obvious, any sort of interesting comment. The myth of Totti, the dummy Totti, the ignoramus, started up on that then. And he was smart enough to actually go along with that, publish those books. And he's become a bit of a public figure. You see him in TV ads all the time. He's actually very good in TV ads. He's actually got quite a bit of acting talent. And he is most definitely not an ignoramus. He's most definitely not stupid. And he does spend a lot of his time, I know it's a cliche for footballers, but he is one who does spend a lot of his time doing charity works of all sorts. And he's been, I think for 10 years now, he's been a UNICEF ambassador. You know, so that part of him is real.
It's that kind of career arc of David Beckham, except without the branding from Simon Fuller and the pop star wife.
Well, he has a pop star wife too, Francesco, because he has Ilari, and Ilari has been, still is, a very successful TV presenter, as well as a very glamorous pop star type figure. So there is a parallel of sorts there. But unlike in the Beckhams, where you could argue that Victoria Adams became, in marketing terms, much, much bigger than her husband, Ilari has never threatened to overshadow Francesco.
I think at this point we should say kudos to you for remembering Victoria Beckham's maiden name.
Yeah, yeah, good shout.
That's worryingly excellent knowledge on your part.
No indication of my age, really, I suppose.
was Toddy, I know he's seventh generation Roman, so you get a sense for his affinity with the city. And you mentioned there his marriage. Is he married long? Like, was he a playboy in his youth? Was he...
I don't think he was, and yeah. He's married... he's married... He's been with Hillary for 20 years. He got married in 2005.
Right.
He's always struck me as somebody who was off the field. Was very quiet, and very interested in trying to have as quiet and private life as possible, which is not something that's easy for him around Rome. Mm.
And was he somebody who would do? You mentioned earlier on in the career saying nothing beyond the very obvious. Did he develop into somebody who would say interesting things in interviews? Did he develop into somebody who would say controversial things about the team when it wasn't going well? Or was he always fairly mundane in that respect?
Well, he's become a person who said... two things. He's been very, very loath to give interviews all through his career. It has not been easy for the journalists from that point of view.
Right.
In recent times, he has, as he's had a sort of unhappy end to his career in the sense that he's argued with the current Roman coach, Luciano Spalletti. And Spalletti obviously, you know, hasn't used him very much. And looking at Totti at the moment, he's nearly 41. You know, I understand Spalletti. If a match really matters, you're not going to start it with Francesco Totti because he's not going to be able to guarantee the sort of mobility and contribution that you need in modern football. So he's been quite outspoken on occasions about him, but that's because he's in a very, very privileged situation. You know, when Rudy Garcia, the Frenchman, turned up at Roma for the first time, and he was looking at Trigoria, the Roma training ground, he was looking at, he was being shown around, he was shown the gym and the playing fields and the dressing room and everything, and the press conference room and everything. There was also this room, which there was just full of memorabilia and posters of Totti. So in Trigoria, the Roma training ground, there's a sort of Totti museum that's put up there by his own personal trainer. Now, there are not many people, not many players have that role in their club, and Totti's always been very, very not just protected but very influential, and there'd be a number of Roma coaches whose careers with Roma came to an end because of Totti's opinion. So he's been a very powerful player.
One of the reasons he's powerful is because he is the key figure when they actually do win the league, their third ever in history under Fabio Capello. And Capello realised that this was a guy who he could trust to run games for him and play centrally.
Yeah, absolutely. He was a key figure to that. And as he was, for Marcello Lippi in winning the World Cup in 2006, you know, Lippi took a big, big chance with Totti before that World Cup, in the sense that Totti had a very bad injury in about the February of that year, and it looked very unlikely that he'd get back. And Lippi was at his bedside the morning after that injury and said, "You get well, son. You know, we will need you in Germany." And indeed, there are a lot of people, when they look at his career, reckon his ability to come back from injury then and prove to be, even though he was obviously less than 100%, proved to be an important figure in that team, was one of the most glorious chapters in his career.
That Scudetto came in 2001.
Yeah.
And just looking, and I'm painting very broad pictures here, but 99 to about 04, 05, that period where they win the Scudetto and he's named Serie A Footballer of the Year in 2000 and 03, he's kind of a playmaker role there. And then maybe from 04, 05 up until 2010, he goes into just being an out-and-out striker. And then it's back to a playmaker and super sub in latter years. Is that a kind of fair, blunt summation of how he was used?
Yeah, it is, except that it's absolutely true. That's I've always seen him as a number 10 in the box behind one or two strikers in front of him. That always struck me as where he should be. But when you say absolutely correctly, chronologically, then he became an out-and-out striker. He was a very anomalous striker. And the person who invented that role for him was Spalletti in his first period as coach at Roma. Spalletti, the man with whom he's arguing the moment, because he realised that he couldn't, Totti's mobility wasn't what it was, and therefore it was better to put him in. Basically, he left him with always looked to me like a free role. He certainly wasn't a classic number nine. He wasn't a central target striker up front. He roamed from wing to wing and from deep midfield to up front all through games.
Yeah. So, what's his legacy?
What's his legacy? His legacy, I would say, is that the class player, the quality player, the guy who really feels very comfortable with the ball at his feet. No matter, he mightn't be the fastest guy in the team, he mightn't be the physically strongest, he mightn't be the most competitive at times, but he can still be a winning card.
And one last point. Obviously, he's beloved in Rome, and you know, you go to Rome and you can see the occasional mosaic on the side of a building, or you'll see Totti just pop up somewhere. It's kind of, not everywhere, but certainly you come across it when you're wandering around. Did he have his ups and downs with fans? Was it generally just adoration, or were there periods where they were frustrated with him and there was, you can criticise your own like no others at times? How did that, across the course of, 20 years, how has that relationship gone, Paddy?
No, he did very, very well with the fans, with the Roma fans. He didn't do necessarily so well we certainly didn't do so well with the Lazio fans, but that's what we understood. But one of the things that's happened at the moment, of course, is that wherever he's gone this year, his last year, the fans, the opposing fans have held up banners and things and saying, honour to Francesco Totti, a great rival and a great footballer and things like that. We've seen quite a bit of that. We even had one, folks, from the Lazio fans last Sunday.
Wow.
Which was saying, because it was the last Lazio home game of the season, because next Sunday it's Roma at home, and they had one up to basically along those lines. Which, you could argue, if you wanted to be cynical, that's been his greatest achievement of his entire career, to get the Lazio fans to support him, because it's a strange thing. The Roma Lazio rivalry is really remarkably felt. I remember one day being down at Roma to interview a couple of players, and it was a Saturday before Roma's league game, but it was a Saturday when there was the reserve team, the Primavera team, the youth team was playing, the Roma youth team was playing the Lazio youth team, and we were hanging around waiting for the players to come out, watching these guys come out to train, and next minute a window opens up from the clubhouse behind us, and here's Totti leaning out the window, shouting the most violent abuse for about 10 minutes at the Lazio players. Huh. And this was just a youth team game.
Right. Wow. And so I presume his send-off will be quite something at the weekend. Will he want to be taken off in the number of his jersey, a la John Terry? Is that how he's going to go?
The number 10?
Yeah.
No, I don't. You mean withdraw the number 10 from the team?
No. I don't know. Did you see John Terry at the weekend coming off in the 26th minute to a guard of honour?
Well, no, but the point about Sunday is, Sunday's game is not a gymkhana or a carnival. It's a serious game. Roma, at home to Genoa, they absolutely need to win to be certain of finishing second in the league. And because the difference between finishing second and third in the league is the Champions League difference, as we all know, is that if you finish second, you're straight into the group section.
Yeah.
If you finish third, you have to play the qualifiers, which means that you have to get which obviously come before the group section, which means that your season begins a bit earlier. So it actually matters a lot. and Italian clubs as well, when they get into that section of the Champions League, they often have a bad record, they're often not fit, and they often fail to go through. So they much prefer to, much really important for Roma to finish second. And in those circumstances, Spalletti's made it very clear, you know, this is a serious game, lads, yeah. And Totti will not be starting. Yeah. And it's even possible that he won't. I mean, if it's 0-0 on the 89th minute, I'm not so sure whether Spalletti will bring him on. I suspect he won't.
Fair play, because that's how football should be run. Well done. Paddy, great stuff. Thanks for joining us this evening.
Okay, thanks very much, lads.
That's Paddy Agnew there. I'd kind of forgotten that he was so central to the Italian team in 2006.
Yeah.
He plays behind Luca Toni. Just looking at the team lineups there for the final, wasn't an amazing team. They had Luca Toni, they had Parada and Camoranesi in it. Mm. I mean, obviously, they had Cannavaro and Materazzi as centre-backs, and Gattuso and Pirlo, who basically won the World Cup for them, and Buffon in goals.
Mm.
But
not quite bad, as you kept naming players there.
No, it got better. The first part of it, Camoranesi and Parada, not great. Luca Toni, not great. Totti, obviously, and that's kind of one of his peaks. And Grosso wasn't actually that good either. Like, he has an amazing World Cup.
Yeah.
He scores an important goal, but
Lippi, I guess, knew how to pull that whole thing together as well, which helped.
Yeah, for sure.
This game's fizzling into nothing, really. Martial is coming on now for Rashford. There's a few minutes to go. It's 2-0 to Manchester United. Ajax look a bit spent. United have actually put a few better passages of football together as Ajax have pushed forward in the last 10 minutes or so while we were speaking to Paddy. But there's 8 minutes to go, and it's fizzling out very nicely. This has just been an unbelievably comfortable win for Manchester United.
Stress free.
Yeah, it's the kind of win they should have had dozens of times in the league against lesser opposition and never quite managed.
West Brom, Swansea.
Yeah.
Hull. So 6 minutes left in that game. I lived in Rome for 8 years. I had a Roma season ticket for two of those years. Thought he was awesome, strong as an ox, great at holding the ball up, got hacked to pieces by defenders. He was a game changer, just top class. There's a James Horncastle piece that said his ankle is held together by a steel plate and multiple screws.
I am, no problem admitting it, I am of the Anglo-Saxon disposition that for a long time I did wonder what the fuss was about with Totti, because in too many big games, the snippets I would see of Champions League football, he didn't perform as well as the name would suggest he should have. You know, I'd kind of moved on to predominantly Premier League, Champions League and La Liga at that stage. I don't know what channel Serie A was on for a good chunk of those.
It wasn't on for ages.
Years, yeah. And so I wouldn't have guffawed at Hoddle and Souness and the boys Venables after that Champions League match in 2010 saying they weren't so sure about him.
Well, I guess the rest of the team around him was crap.
Didn't help. And you do see he wins 5 Serie A Player of the Year awards.
Yeah.
So week to week, clearly he's an amazing player. But I feel like I've missed Totti at his very best. I'd love to have had 2 years living in Rome. Well, living in Rome anyway.
Yeah, it sounds pretty good.
2 years with a season ticket.
Speaking of another Roma great, Claudio Caniggia, I remember acting the Egypt in front of my older brother who said, "You're acting like Claudio Caniggia's brother, Foo. Stop messing," from Gordon in Dublin. You don't get it. Foo.
Caniggia.
There you go.
That's a classic.
All right. Tommy just walked in and went, these are the talking points of the main news for today. They're a bit shit. So we're going to bring you Tommy's shit talking points right after these.
News Talks Off the Ball.
Find us on Twitter at Off the Ball.
Thanks to Air, with UEFA Champions and Europa Leagues action. Brought to you by Air Sport.
So, what stage of the Champions League will Man United qualify for? Straight through to the group stages as the winners of the Europa League.
Yeah, it's a good deal. So, as things stand, as of this evening, Manchester City, Spurs, and Chelsea, and Manchester United are in the Champions League. Liverpool are not. And would you trust them to get through that qualifying stage?
Ah, yeah.
Would you trust them, really?
Yeah, they'll have to rejig their entire off-season.
Jesse Lingard there, just at a moment, because Ajax are pushing for this, obviously, where he was... Okay, I'm pushing a replay. He definitely got shoved. But he was in one-on-one from the halfway line. It's the kind of chance you don't see once you go past under-11s. And so Lingard was sprinting, and as he got closer to the ball, you know, to the goal and had to dribble, just got slower and slower and slower and got caught by Sanchez, who just pushed him out of the way, and the referee didn't give a penalty. It was a real, the opposite to those players who are faster running with the ball moment.
He was very, push me. He should have just had a bit of balls and gone for it.
The first few touches, I mean, he did that thing halfway line, takes him, hits the ball 20 yards ahead of him, then 15 yards ahead of him, and then little touch, and slows down so much, he almost comes to a stop, and Sanchez gets him.
What's this? It's the John Terry moment for Wayne Rooney. It's his final moment in Manchester United shirt.
This is a bit embarrassing. Is it worse to come on in the 90th minute?
89 and a half minutes.
Or to not come on at all?
They're taking Mata off. Mata's taking his time now, just to make sure that everybody gets the chance to go. We love you, Wayne Rooney.
I suppose it's nice for Rooney. The fans are there, but he doesn't look, you know, he's standing there. It's a bit of a low-key exit, isn't it, to be brought on for the 90th minute when you're 2-0 up. You've been 2-0 up for a long time.
Yeah.
Give him 20 minutes.
No, you could still screw it up. What happens if they suddenly... And you've got to have him lumbering around the place for the whole 30 minutes of extra time.
Well, if he'd been Jesse Lingard, he wouldn't got to within 20 yards of the penalty area.
No, that's true. But he would have shot from 50 yards and would have gone straight in the top corner.
The crowd are obviously all giving that point and screaming Rooney, Rooney. So, yeah, God, it's a real... We've just talked about Totti. That's end of era stuff as well. Wayne Rooney's last 3-4 minutes as a Man United player.
Yeah. And so here's... Tommy basically is a Man United fan, I should stress. That's why the talking points aren't particularly good. He's like cut and paste three stories from BBC football in the last 8 minutes after they were 2-0 up. So Real Madrid are going to sign a 16-year-old Vinicius
Junior.
Yeah. From Flamengo for 40 million quid.
That is a 4 out of 10 story. It's poor that that's the lead talking point story.
Crystal Palace might be interested in Marco Silva after apparently the chance of him going to Porto is not nailed on.
Okay.
You would have thought the Porto job was a good job for him because Champions League experience at that level, maybe then you can get a much bigger super club job.
My reaction to that story is okay, grand.
Crystal Palace, who's going to be the next Crystal Palace manager?
Again.
You don't care.
I'd be pretending to at this point.
Roy Hodgson is apparently interested in a return to football
for
Crystal Palace. I'm doubling down on the Crystal Palace shit news. Sorry,
we're going to run out of road here quickly. Okay, that's three stories done.
Jermaine Defoe is getting 20 million quid to play for Bournemouth.
That is interesting. That's an unbelievable deal for Jermaine Defoe. I know he's going on a free transfer.
We were talking about this, I think, at the weekend with Kev, and he's basically like, you know, it's not really a 3-year deal at all. He's getting this, they'll give him the money over 3 years, but that actually they only need him for 2 years, and this is the cost of having a player score goals for you in 2 years. They're writing off the fact if they get him playing football because he's too old. He'll be 37.
37 when he finishes up here, yeah.
And there's no chance that he's going to have any meaningful impact considering he hasn't scored in about 4 months.
But he has scored 15 goals this season.
All up to January.
Yeah.
It's a possibility that cliff was last January and you're giving him 20 million quid.
I can't believe they're giving him 20 million over 3 years. I would have thought he would take half that.
Yeah. The currency of goals in the Premier League is
sure.
It's pretty high. Bournemouth were the other team who were strongly linked with John Terry, but I think they're just too smart to do that.
Tom Dunn's coming. Can we finish the talking points here?
Yeah, I don't care.
They're terrible.
Arsenal defensive crisis deepens after Mustafi revealed his FA Cup doubt is another. That's what you're stopping us from getting in depth in.
They
can go back to it, can't they?
Another.
I'm surprised you're not wearing a Manchester United jersey this evening.
Too nervous to. I thought I might jinx them if I did anything out of the ordinary. So watch the first half at home. It's all good.
Very comfortable for them, really.
Very comfortable. I'm still kind of waiting, thinking there must be something more to Ajax than this. Even seeing the strip makes me nervous because I remember Ajax when they were one of those teams back in the day with... that was easy. When they were all dominant. Remember that many, many, many moons ago?
Sure.
Before your time, possibly even.
Yeah. I'm delighted you noticed that.
Well, we called them Ajax for years and years before we were finally corrected. it's good. The thing about this is Liverpool get knocked out of.
Was the toilet cleaner Ajax?
Ajax was the toilet cleaner.
And that was how you pronounced that?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah, that would have been very confusing as a kid.
Yes, it was.
Other people speak different languages. What are you talking about?
What's their problem? Why can't they speak our language? I did a big thing last night at the show on Manchester music, given the events, the horrible events. Such a great city. It got stronger as it went on. It really, a bit of me thinks maybe I should move there. I think I kind of feel a cultural affinity with the place. You know, it's the type of bands they produce, the lyrical quality to so many of their bands. The Smiths, for instance, obviously top of those lists. But so many others as well. So going to continue that on tonight because they're just, it's an amazing city.
Do you think cities like Manchester, where it rains a lot and it's gloomy, produce better lyrics?
I do think that is part of it, but I do think the Irish thing is massive, that it is a melting pot of Irish, Caribbean and other, you know, ethnic groups coming into the city. But I think the Irish thing carries enormous weight because we in Ireland value our lyrics and our words enormously. It's always been a huge thing with us, whether that's down to the rain or not, I don't know. And I think we brought that to England, and people like Morrissey and Johnny Marr had an appreciation of it, and Dexys, Midnight Runners, very similar too. Mm. They have the same kind of lyrical, you know, beliefs and passions that we have.
So would Irish music in your travels have a reputation abroad for good lyrics?
Absolutely. Right. Yeah. Yeah.
We'd be known for that.
We are.
Right.
Very much so.
Interesting.
And for generations we have been, you know. So continuing on with that, and... is that it?
That's it. You want to
that
know.
Is. And did I see Zlatan, who's now...
hobbling onto the field, of course.
Did I see him wearing a plaster at some point after his operation? Not in... was that a fake photograph?
I don't know.
He looks to be in a plaster now underneath his trouser. He's limping unbelievably gingerly.
Yeah.
Like he's not actually able to bend his right leg. It looks like it isn't a plaster.
He is neither in a full kit nor in a club suit. He's just being Zlatan.
There was a photograph of him on crutches and he just had like a little band-aid over his knee.
Oh, yeah?
And people were saying only Zlatan could do this after that kind of surgery. Ajax looked bereft. And this absolutely changes United's season completely. You could imagine them signing Griezmann tomorrow now, couldn't you?
Two trophies, you know?
Yeah, two trophies and Champions League football for all those players who might ditter and not want to join them.
But deep down, you know it's been rubbish.
Rubbish.
You know it.
Absolute rubbish. Painful. Not that dissimilar to the Van Gaal. Worst of it. Yeah, it's been very, very painful. Very painful.
You know what, lads? That's how football works for most fans. Welcome to the real world.
Yeah, I just feel like we had 20 years there.
Yeah, exactly. Happiness.
I'm playing the sacred song tonight at the opening of the show. Fans who used to listen to Pet Sounds years ago during the glory days will know what song that's going to be. And it has a Manchester connection as well.
A Manchester band?
You used
band?
To play it every single night when United were playing in Europe.
Oh, yeah? And they always won, of course.
They did, strange to say. So we'll roll it out again tonight.
All right. Well, all be tuned in for the opening track, which is Tom's Happy Place.
A great song.
We're going to take a quick break. We'll get some post-match reaction from Graham Hunter. We'll talk more about whatever you want as well. 5-3-1-6. How bad has the season been for Manchester United? Is it saved? Text us now.
News Talks Off the Ball.
Find us on Twitter at Off the Ball.
Thanks to Air, with UEFA Champions and Europa Leagues action. Brought to you by Air Sport.
A night early, we've got Graham Hunter on. Graham, how are you doing?
Fellas, yeah, good. Thank you. Nice to see you the other night.
Yeah, long time no see.
Good night. Good night as well. I think we were the stars of the League Managers Association dinner.
There you go. I was
more or less
relatively well behaved.
Yeah, he's been talking about you, Graham.
No comment.
Everybody's been disappointed with the quality of the game. I don't know what you made of it. We were kind of...
No, listen, I'm not being contrary. But look, how many times after a final did we used to say, geez, one goal, won it, or extra time and penalties? I think... what I'll draw out of this is it's absolutely evident that the young talent at Ajax wasn't ready for a display like this. And if you're looking for things to admire, which I found, I thought that this was a perfectly planned and executed game by Mourinho and Manchester United. Maybe not thrilling, but I think we're not only in this for carnival. And I think that when you look at United and their ability to draw matches this season that they shouldn't, this was... You know, from the outset, they absolutely understood the game that Ajax would try to play. They absolutely understood that they were taller, quicker, physically stronger, packed full of experience. They imposed that in every part of the game. Fellaini, who's not a popular footballer, he's not a footballer who I'd turn the television on to watch, in blocking Ajax's ability to bring the ball out from the back by working hard, making sure that there were never easy passes. Maybe what I'm not saying he did a... his positioning was world class, but his work rate was such that these young, inexperienced guys who played, who liked to play, are kind of purist Cruyff, Guardiola, Barca way in terms of what they want to do with the ball. They weren't making the risky passes. They weren't going past the man as you must do to break the line of pressure. Therefore, you sit back and you look at Manchester United, how much more clinical and intelligent and confident they were when they had the ball from top to bottom. I thought this was not only utterly deserved, but you could put an X-ray on it and say that you understood precisely all the choices that Mourinho made in planning the game and the players executed every last one of them. I don't think that's a bad thing to come away from final saying.
I totally accept what you're saying. There was a different level there. That said, you couldn't escape the sense that Ajax still underperformed. I last counted the number of times, for instance, that Sanchez was left have the ball. They'd identified him clearly, yes, and said, you take the ball, let's see what you can do. And yes, too often all he could do was pass the ball directly to Mario and Fellaini.
Absolutely correct, and therefore what you look at and you say, what do we want to do? Manchester United to do like we used to do at school and say, listen, you have two of our players, we're leaving the game up and see if we still win. Mm. You know, this is a side where I think our admiration of them comes from the fact that most of these players have been spotted and signed rather than developed, and it's not easy to put together a young side at speed buying from other clubs. That's really difficult to do. You know, when the manager takes over, it's a new level for him. They haven't won the Dutch League. The Dutch League, for anybody who watches it over a weekend, it's now much less full of quality. Any good quality gets taken away quickly. It's slower. Even the simple displays of technical excellence and strategic intelligence are lesser. So you have a second-place team from a league where you know it's going to be very, very difficult for one of their clubs to win a European final, never mind get to it. I think we saw what a display from Ajax that you could comprehend, because unless you're talking about a one-off, unbelievable elite side,
yeah,
then they're coming into this with heavily handicapped against. They weren't meant to win this. I didn't expect them to win this. It would have been fantastic for the entertainment value had they been a little bit more confident, a little bit more clinical, maybe a little bit more daring. But I think that you must always look at the winners and say, how did they do it? It's clear how they did it. And if there's any disparity between people's impression of, say, Jose Mourinho's CV or why he's been brought to Manchester United and what he's achieved thus far and what the players think of his regime, because I don't think all the players are wholly in love with the manner in which they play. It isn't just the media or the fans. Then tonight you saw total commitment. That for whatever, to be totally careful, if any of them have drawn determination not to let the city down, the club down, after what's happened this week, that might be an added factor. But we saw absolute football intelligence, clinical performance by United. And if I can throw one little thing in, as the corner comes across for the second goal that seals the match, it isn't Mata's assist. It's the header from Smalling. Mkhitaryan's reaction, fabulous. Just to be that quick, to think of scoring like that. But I look at Mata now, I think, with six European trophies between club and country, and he's the man who produces. It's his corner for the assist for Drogba. Way back, as soon as he started winning international tournaments for Spain at a very young age, as far back as 2006. His finals always bring goals or assists. The European Championship 2012 goal. Two assists when Chelsea won the Europa League under Benfica under Rafa Benitez against Benfica. You're not calling it an assist tonight. Crucial, brilliant corner to pick out Smalling all through his career. When he gets to the finals, the man who turns up, the man who turns games, and he won't be talked about enough a lot, but I think he should be.
Does he have a future? I just wonder how many of these players Mourinho actually likes and wants to keep.
I think the power base is changing a little bit from Ed Woodward, isn't it, to Mourinho, now that he's brought them to the Champions League qualification. And I think that his voice will be a lot louder, and therefore I think that the moving on process will be a lot firmer. And the idea that the club simply want to buy a very big name will probably diminish a little bit, and you'll see efficacy in the signings. And therefore, yeah, I know of one player who would stay if he's absolutely sure that he'll have a key role in affairs, not just staying on for the likes of it. And those who've been there the longest, I think, will want to be at Manchester United on merit. There's a common factor amongst those who've come through the Alex Ferguson era and who are still there now, and they don't simply want to be there making up the numbers. I think that is a common factor across them. So, yeah, I think that there will be significant changes. And I think that if you look at the way they play, I think there probably needs to be, if they're going to be, because we ended the season talking about Manchester United's need to be in the Champions League, but I don't think that's what those who invest in them as fans spending their money invest passion, invest time and money. Those who invest in them in terms of being their sponsors, and those who maybe were attracted, who are neutral, but would turn on the television to watch Manchester United and Ferguson because you were guaranteed skill and excitement. It's not about whether they can finish top four. It's supposed to be about whether they can win the title and the Champions League or be competitive in the Champions League. And therefore, doesn't he need to spend that money and bring those players in that you mentioned? I think the answer is yes.
Yeah. So let's develop that point then, because I think everybody agrees with you. And this next season is a defining one for Mourinho, and therefore this summer is a defining one. Because Manchester United fans that you would talk to, and it's plain, even you just watch them, they've kind of gone along with this season to a point. Quiet murmur of, oh, this is not that dissimilar from Van Gaal or Moyes.
No.
We really haven't progressed. And Gary Neville, in a pretty nuanced and fair discussion with Jamie Carragher a couple of weeks ago on Monday Night Football on Sky, said, you know, they were pointing out how so often in the big games, Mourinho effectively has, you know, a bank of six at the back and it's very defensive. And Neville said to Carragher, who was criticising Mourinho, Neville said, look, we give him another transfer window, and then next season, if Manchester United are still approaching the big games in this way, if this is how Mourinho is approaching these games, then he's going to hit some trouble. And I would go along with that assessment. I think that's where Mourinho is, and I'm sure he must be aware of that himself, Graeme.
I buy your argument. It's really accurate. It's intelligently put. But I think that Manchester United has become much more nuanced than it was once, in that there is not an Arsenal culture there at the moment. It's not coasting and getting dividends and turning over huge profits only. But it's closer to that than it was.
Yeah.
And the owners will look at Champions League qualification as a hugely important thing. And here is, I don't think it should be obscured, and I haven't made a big deal out of it, but I think winning a trophy is always an enormous thing. And I think winning a European trophy, you both listen to me drone on about the Europa League often enough, about the importance of it, the way in which it trains players to be ready for the Champions League, irrespective of the fact that the fans get this massive boost of adrenaline and joy of going to a foreign city and watching a team lift a trophy. That's, all of these things are gigantically important for the development, for the evolution of a club culture, of a daily culture, of belief. So these things are all good. And who am I? I'm not gainsaying Gary Neville for a second. But I think that there is a culture at United whereby if things didn't change, if they drifted, if they felt there was a bit of stagnation and a lack of flair, a lack of daring, and a lack of ability to turn a 1-1 into a 3-1, then the media criticism, the fan criticism might increase. But whether that would automatically mean difficult times for Jose Mourinho at that club at this stage, I'd be a bit concerned about saying, yeah, definitely, you're right.
No, I'd agree. I think you're right. I think they drift along, but just we can agree the general atmosphere. I feel whatever license fans and media and former players, however important all that stuff is really in the modern football world, whatever license has been given, I think next season those parties certainly are approaching the end of the rope
that
they're going to give.
I buy that.
And
so
it'd be
the trophy buys them extra time. It does. If they'd lost tonight, that would have been from day one.
Oh, if they lose tonight, it's a crisis. I'm not sure how much time it buys them, actually. I think a lot of fans and former players look at this and think,
it buys them that whole transfer window and those players settling in. So if he signs somebody like...
Go on.
If he signs somebody like Griezmann, then he has until Christmas for Griezmann to settle in and find a way to play with him.
I think we're all... We mustn't dance around the handbags here. There is, apart from all the things which are there, you've mentioned, or we've all mentioned, individual elements, individual strands that are all important. But what we do know is that Mourinho has always been a very pragmatic, very percentage-based football coach. At certain times, undoubtedly, in the last two-thirds of his title-winning season at Real Madrid, when he was playing 4-3-3 with Duff and Robin wide, in the Champions League winning side of Porto, at stages in his Inter Milan performances, there have been identical times when it's not buccaneering, but it's exciting, it's daring, and if he sees he's got momentum, he will press the throttle. Other than that, what we have to be talking about, even next season, is the idea that he's asking players not to take risks. He's asking them not to do the things that I think you're both hinting at, the things that under Ferguson, but clearly before, under Greenwood, under even Tommy Docherty, but certainly under Matt Busby, that the sense of thrill, the sense of daring, the front foot, the take on the man, dominate the arrival, make the fans sing, make the fan passionate, make the world fall in love with you, all that kind of stuff. That isn't going to be, no matter how many better players he gets at United, I don't think that's going to be Mourinho's approach. I think he's gone past that. And therefore, we may always be talking about a certain lack of vinculation, communication between the dream, the image, the ideal, and what Mourinho's going to bring. And, and despite the fact that he may still bring significant success. If we're reaching out for the past in the way we're describing what we think about the future, then I think we're being naive.
Yeah, I think it's going to be more Inter Milan-style Jose Mourinho team grinding away to success that Man United fans have to get ready for. And now he's got a platform to do that from and plenty of money too. One last quick question. Obviously they have loads of money, but they're probably going to get loads of money for David De Gea. Like, is that a 60, 80 million quid? 100 million?
It's odd to me. You said be quick. Okay, it's odd to me, but there does seem to be momentum that Mourinho is willing to do that deal to Real Madrid. Real Madrid absolutely want him. And there's been an atmosphere created where David De Gea, as I understand it, is more and more willing to look at doing that. How they get the right price and the right keeper, unless it's all black, I'm not so sure. Madrid will pay a big premium. You're right. Is it the right thing to do to take away one of the building blocks? I don't know.
Graham, great stuff. Thanks a million, man.
Thanks, Graham.
See you, lads.
This is our last football show proper of the summer. Tomorrow night we'll be bringing you our road show from the Helix. Unbelievable lineup. And then next week we're back to a 2-hour show.
Well, look, Jared, if that's the way it has to be, that's the way it has to be.
That's pretty much all we've got time for tonight. Do we have any competition winners to tell you about? We probably do. Yes, we do. Earlier on, we gave you the chance to win a pair of VIP tickets to our Off the Ball FA Cup 2017 roadshow at the Helix tomorrow, with thanks to Budweiser, official beer of the Emirates FA Cup. Congratulations to John Prendergast, who's won those tickets. We'll see you tomorrow night. John, alongside John Giles, Mark Lawrence and David O'Leary, Ronnie Whelan, Michael Ballack and Keith Andrews. We're going to be live blogging from the venue all day too, building up to the show. So keep an eye on all our social media channels. Tom Dunn's up next. Good night.